this chat between myself and Michael Mazurkovic. Is that right?
Yeah.
Hey, this feels like it's 2.5 years late because I first knew of you from the Isolation Film Festival. Was that because you were friends with Manny at that point and he was submitting?
I was in Manny's the Thirst for Blood the revenge thing.
Yeah.
That my friend Zach did
Blood
with him.
And Justice.
Well. Yeah, I mean Blood and Justice. That, thank you.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, so that was part of it. I think
it was two films. You were in like you're in a basement, you were wearing a very thin orange like
yes.
What do you call it?
Little ripped up t-shirt.
Little orange number, yeah.
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 Yeah, that was Breaking Free.
That's
that
right,
was a,
yeah.
a short film. I had someone help with the editing because I'm not good at that. But that one I wrote, filmed, lit. Like I was pretending to be a grip, like taking lamps and bouncing them off of cardboard at myself. It was very fun.
Yeah.
Definitely gave me a lot of respect for what other people do in film.
And I know we kind of gone straight into it, but it's really nice to finally speak with you, Michael, because I will say my wife and I are fans from the films you've submitted to the festivals that I've been, you know, the director and founder of. And we, this is a really, really odd compliment, but I see you being some sort of serial killer in the future. Not in real life, but in a feature or some sort of really good short. So you have that, you have that kind of quality, you know.
Thank you. Yeah, that is a very
but
weird
interesting
compliment.
Character. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you specified in a movie. You know, not in real life. You know, I don't really murder people.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we've been fans, and you're turning Blood and Justice. I know it was a small role, but in one of the montages, there's a really great shot of you at the start from the start of the film, where the main kind of characters come together, and you know there's a really kind of sinister scene in Blood and Justice. But anyone listening to this, check out Blood and Justice if you can online.
Totally.
But it kind of reminded me of Jeff Goldblum's turn in Death Wish with Charles Bronson. But it had that kind of really sinister edge to it. And my question is, from these films that you're tortured in, your blood's kind of farmed out of your body, are you kind of a sadist at heart or something?
Oh, what a great question. I do also want to say that, like, I love the work that you do with your podcast and your festival, and I'm really excited to be here. Like, very excited.
Oh, that's
you
cool,
know, a bunch
man.
Of my friends are like, oh my God, there's this guy, he does this thing, he's in England, he's amazing. Like, we all here in the little pocket of Kitchener Waterloo film industry, we're all big fans of yours.
Oh, that's very kind.
Yeah. But yeah, going to your question. I wouldn't call myself a sadist or super a masochist. I think part of it is just that, you know, in film, it's easy to try to get money for horror. So, or try to, you know, get an audience for horror because, you know, people always want the next big scare. So a lot, part of it is that it's just a lot of that gets made, but part of that is also like I like what I do, no matter what the role is, I try to the deepest depth of the human condition that I can. So if I'm, you know, if I'm skinning myself, I'm going to be skinning myself from the deepest, most emotionally painful place I can find. If I'm killing someone, I'm going to find, you know, so no matter what I do, I'm going to try to find that depth. But the people that I roll with for some of the independent projects I do are kind of deliciously, beautifully messed up, you know, like Brian Lockyer, the writer and director of Snowblinded. He approached me. We'd already done some stuff together, and he was like, hey, I've got this new idea. You know, is it cool for you? Your cottage is one of the locations. Also, you're going to be like running around naked in the snow covered in blood, and you're going to do some this, and this horrifying thing. And I was like, all right, yeah. But, you know, so he, you know, he's got some things going on him. Zach King, who He and I are actually working on like a feel-good dramedy right now, which is hilarious because we have done some messed up things together because, you know, he loves horror. He loves messed up things. He did Blood and Justice, and like Manny came to him and was like, hey, like, I want to do this thing. I want Mike to act in it. I want to be the lead. I want to, you know, be this sort of tortured hero villain kind of a character. And Zach was all right and wrote up this messed up thing. Michael Malko, you know, every now and then reaches out to me and is just like, okay, so I want to do this thing and I think it's you, and you know, you're in love with this corpse of a guy you kidnapped and murdered and want to have sex with. So like part of it is also like a lot of the amazing creative people that I hang out with are kind of messed up. So they call me up and they're like, hey, we need someone who can bring depth and realness to this extremely messed up role. You want to come in? And I'm like, hey, I like you. Yeah, let's do it.
That's awesome, man.
So
that's something I've been, I've got to say, like, the filmmakers and artists that I've gotten to know through the Isolation Film Festival and Hellbound and the podcast we're working on now, there seems to be such a great core. Or there's several different creative groups in Toronto, in wider Canada, north of Toronto, that's you can see the personalities and how they work together so well, like Henry Tran, Michael Chan, who works on the podcast, and Manny and yourself and Katisha Shaw, and there's just so many people and creative talent. And that's probably the best thing I've gotten out of the festivals, is kind of connecting with you guys and seeing your personality shine through. And that's one of the questions I kind of wanted to talk to you. One of the things I kind of wanted to talk to you about, you know, you've got like a melting pot of friends, you know, different personalities and that. How do you kind of choose a project? Is it something that someone just kind of strikes an idea, or you've got a few ideas together? How do you kind of get to a point where this is the project we're going to actually work on?
I mean, first of all, the people that you've mentioned, you know, Henry, I haven't worked with yet. Unless he's nice the Henry guy. That I did. He didn't. Did he do a Basemaker commercial? Because I did Next a Basemaker commercial with a Henry. At a bus stop. Oh, that Henry. Oh, I love him. Yeah. Henry's amazing. Michael Chan is amazing. Manny is amazing. Katisha is amazing. You know, and one of the things that we love is that festivals like yours, you know, give us a chance to get together and talk about our work and meet people like you. So like, you know, thank you for everything Hellbound does to keep building and growing that community. That's really important to us. Thank you.
That's okay.
But also, yeah, so for your question, yeah. You know, it's funny because it's such a hodgepodge. The thing is that, like, ideas are cheap. You know, I have like 12, 7 to 15 page treatments on varying production levels of projects that, like, I'm just waiting on being like, oh, okay, I have the inspiration to work on this one right now. Ideas are cheap. And when you hang out with creatives, we're all having tons and tons of ideas. And it makes it really fun to hang out because, you know, sometimes we'll just get a little inebriated and be like, oh, how about this? we could do this. Oh, you know, I thought of this one thing. What about this? And it's great. You know, it's super fun. But the ones that pick up momentum are the ones that people are willing to give to, because, you know, we're all really busy. We're all hustling, trying to also get paid to do it. So the passion projects, some of them just light you up, you know. So and other times it's just, you know, it's like the sake of friendship. Like Manny was like, hey Mike, like I'm doing this thing with Zach. I'm like, well, I'm, you know, Manny worked for free for Snowblinded for the blistering cold, like almost almost lost a foot from frostbite. Like, I'm not going to say no to him for anything. You know, Zach filmed me interviewing people in a toga for like 4 years. I'm not going to say no to him for anything. So I'm like, of course, whatever you need. But, you know, but sometimes an idea will catch on, and other times it's sort of a combination. And the nice thing is that, like, a lot of the creatives that I work with and that I love to work with, a quality that a lot of us have in common is a willingness to share the creative aspects. So it's not like, hey, I came up with this idea. I am going to be doing these things and you're going to fill this role. It's, hey, I came up with this idea. What do you think? Now we're talking, like snowblinded. Brian came up to me with this idea. And for the next 3 weeks, we were like, just like back and forthing about it. And then we were in the car on the way to visit the location. We were like, oh, what if this happens? Oh, the character could do this. And that stuff's really exciting because now it's their creativity involved, but your creativity is also involved and you're starting to come up with new things from that. And it's just building momentum. And then, you know, you take those ideas and you bring that to someone else and, you know, you're bringing it to them, but you're also letting them bring what they want. And that, you know, builds the idea more and brings more momentum. And it's just a really fun process to be part of. But part of it is who's bringing the idea. Mm-hmm. Part of it is how the idea catches me. Like sometimes someone will bring me an idea and I'll be like, oh, that's cool. You know, that's fun. Sometimes someone will bring me the idea and I'll be like, oh, you mean I would get to play this?
Yeah, that was one of my questions. That is there ever do you ever look at a certain project, whether it's yours or someone else's, and think, this is where I can try this, or this is something where I can do physical comedy or where I can do action? Is there ever do you ever kind of look at a project and go, right, I can try this and add an additional string to my bow?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, a lot of that is just like, no matter what I do, I know that I'm going to be learning. I know that I'm going to be bringing my depth to the table and that the director is going to say, well, can you try it this way? And then I'm going to have to bring something new to the table and learn how to take what I had and tweak it into what they want and then create some sort of synergy. So like, no matter what, I know that that's going to be happening. And, you know, if I like the team, then I know that I can do more of that. And it's even more exciting. But yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, I'm bad at saying no to projects. If a project is unpaid and I don't really know the people doing it, I'm getting better at setting boundaries and being like, listen, I want to, but this is my schedule right now, so I don't know if I can. But you know, I love all the projects, you know, and every project has something beautiful from the director and something beautiful from the DOP and something beautiful from the writer and, you know, the producer. And like, everything is just great. Like, I wish I could say yes to all of it. So I don't often say no to something, but it is exciting to be like, oh, in this role, I will get to do more of this. In this role, I will get to do more of this. And sometimes it takes you by surprise. Like for Snowblinded as an example, I knew I was going to that I was going to get to play some depravity and some losing my mind and some psychosis. And those experiences really, really grew me. Like I had to get to some crazy places and it, you know, it really, that really grew me. But I didn't realize that another growth point would just be taking an actual friend, Manny, and improvising a scene and finding depth and comedy in the same scene as we sort of synergize together. I wasn't expecting that because, you know, but it ended up becoming a really big aspect of the film and a really big way to grow, you know? But it's also, it's like sometimes, you know, like I took this role in Regicide, which I'm hoping will do really well. And I was going to play this husband who was super, super douchey. And I knew that there would be a scene where I was going to cry. And I was like, okay, I'm going to like put that in. Like he's got this redemption scene. I'm really going to give it for that. I didn't realize how much fun it would be to play an absolute dick, to play someone who's like so stressed that anything is enough to trigger just massive douchiness at any moment. And, you know, I didn't realize how fun that would be. Yeah, you know, I did the cult, the people Collingwood film, who are absolutely fantastic, and they're up in like Owen Sound and Collingwood and Blue Mountain. They did Cult Hero. I had a small role in that, and then they brought me on for this project that's in post right now that I'm so excited for, called Vessel 17. And I'm playing this sort of sad, douchey husband who's like kind of petty because he has low self-worth, but is also like, yeah. And then my character goes through a twist where by the end of the film, he's, without giving too much away, like kind of this violent badass, but still within the realm of the guy he was before, just now he's finding his badass violent side. So I got to be me as an actor finding this character as he finds this side of himself. And, you know, and I knew that I would get this character. I didn't know that I'd get to find this character as this character finds this character in himself. And it was just so cool, you know, just like finding someone as they find themselves. And, yeah, it really, you know, it was very challenging, but it really grew me and was really, really fun.
That's something I can totally appreciate when I come to storyboard an idea, even if it's for a commercial or a cinema ad I may be working on or editing. As soon as you start seeing how it's really going to, you know, come together, you get there's extra layers of excitement every time, I think. And it's really interesting to hear that from a performer's point of view. But yeah, yourself and Manny, I think in terms of the two of you, I absolutely love watching the two of you work together. But it's great to find like-minded people that you can not necessarily rely on, because, you know, I think that's almost too much pressure to say, I know this person's going to work with me every time I make a short. But it's great. It must be great to have people that you can bounce ideas off at the very least, isn't it?
Definitely. And that's the... that's the great aspect of you know, building community, where if one of us has an idea, we go to the people in our group, and even if none of them say, yes, I'm going to do this with you, they will still all have ideas and feedback that will grow it, even if they don't ultimately come on board. And sometimes they do, and then, you know, and then they have an opportunity to provide even more ideas and feedback and grow it even more. But it's definitely, you know, it's a real synergy where you go in, you're like, okay, here's the character I've developed and the choices I've made. And then the other actor or whoever else is in the scene has their character, their choices. And then the director has their idea of the character and their idea of the choices. And then you bring those all together. And then, you know, by take three, you're finding something new. And the director's like, what did you do that time? Because I said this, you said this. Then we were doing kind of this, but then that just happened. What was that? And you're like, oh man, let's do that again. And, you know, when people feel open to be able to create with each other, when people feel comfortable enough with each other to just let things flow and let things play, you're always finding new gems, new choices, new emotional beats or new pieces to bring in. And that is so, so fun. And that's the best part of, you know, these communities and the people that we love to work with, is that we're comfortable enough with each other that even when we're talking about ideas and just riffing that way, let alone when we're, you know, on the day in front of the camera, we can do that. We can feel comfortable and bring new stuff in and play. And I have one of the best acting teachers that I've ever trained with, Sophie Ann Rooney of Raw. If there's any actors in Toronto listening to this, fucking great. But she calls it riffing. She says, it's like jazz. Everyone's bringing their own instrument and we're all just tuning and playing the instruments together. And it's like a jazz piece. You know, it's always growing. It's always changing.
Absolutely. That's something that even at, you know, the highest level to the lowest level, from like Steven Spielberg has got, like, I think it's 14 people that he normally works with and has worked with for the last 20 films. And you can have that when you're starting off. You can have a friend from university or from college or whatever. And it's really, I think it's just something that I kind of thought about when you were just mentioning you can collaboration, is you've got to be able to be vulnerable with your ideas in front of other people as well. Because if you hold back anything, I think you can't, you really need to have that flexibility. Like, I'm working on something at the moment called Set Up and Shoot, and it's basically a production diary series, a YouTube thing, where we're going through the initial initial creating an idea for a short, and then when mm-hmm. we have the time, putting a production diary out for every single stage of a short film. It's probably been done before, but we're doing it from a point of view where we all work, you know, to earn money to pay for your house, whatever. And we've got, you know, kids or family or dogs, and trying to fit in a creative work, you know, creative life alongside that. So with that, with my creative partner, Jack Mason, he and I mm-hmm. have been totally transparent with our availability, our ideas. If they're bad ideas, you can have judgmental friends, but it's kind of not healthy to have that within the kind of creative space, because you need to be able to be vulnerable with everything, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so it's definitely. It's really important to have kind of those like-minded people. Is Snowblinded something that's already available to view online? What kind of stage is that at the moment?
I just want to say that sounds like this production diary thing with all of that awareness of yourselves and your schedule and your budgets and your timelines. This sounds great. Definitely going to watch that. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. So it's something that we've got. Basically, there's an idea. Oh, I don't want to make this about me, but we all do it in some way or another. It's called Chords, and it's about reconciliation between a daughter and a father. And I might cut this out. I don't know.
A few moments later.
I wouldn't have gotten to that point without having the vulnerability with my friends to talk through the idea. You know, mm-hmm. and you've got to be 100%. So open-minded. And yeah, I love kind of seeing you, yourself and Manny. But when my wife saw your performance in Blood and Justice, it was it's a small role, but it kind of really stuck out to us. So we had it showcased in front of about 20 people, all the nominated films, and that kind of stood out for us, your performance. And obviously, I love watching Manny anyway.
Thank you. It's great. Yeah, he's very, very fun.
So,
yeah, I mean, that.
Yeah, what's where's kind of Snowblinded up to at the moment?
I do, and you know, if you want, this can also be cut, but I do want to say one more thing about that. First of all, thank you. And second of all, you know, exactly. And something that I have learned for myself is that when an idea really sticks to you is important. You know, part of it is it's hard to be vulnerable to give that. But part of it is also that telling people and them not resonating with it and you know, and having people that love you and are willing to also tell you it doesn't resonate is really good. Because that, like, I'll be like, guys, here's this idea. And they'll be like, well, that doesn't work. But if I'm comfortable with them, I'll be like, okay, fine. That doesn't work for you. But here's why this idea is important to me. And they'll be like, okay. So we see that you're playing with this aspect that really, you know, plays this one string for you. We don't think that aspect comes out in this. But if that string is important to you, could you try it with these notes? And you go, oh, okay. Well, you know, these notes are okay, but it, you know, it's not just this string, it's also this string. And they're like, oh, okay. You know, so when you're vulnerable about your idea with people who are actually willing to disagree with you, but also willing to talk about why and why the idea is important to you, then, you know, you can deepen the idea, because ultimately your goal is to take this thing that is important to you and give it to an audience. So if you're telling someone about it and they don't get it, that means the audience isn't going to get it either. But if you're telling someone about it and they're like, well, here's why I don't get that. And you can be like, well, here's why it is important. They can be like, okay, well, maybe that could work this way. And you're like, yeah, that's not quite right, but that's towards this, you know, and then you can really refine these ideas, you know, and that's another aspect of the creative community that I think is really valuable.
Mm.
No, it sounds like you have that with your creative partner as well.
Yeah,
which is
it's
cool.
The idea, I kind of wrote the short script, I'd say 10 to 15 years ago. And it was because we all collect, like, if you could see the rest of this room, there's piles of books and hard drives and all sorts of stuff. But I was basically getting rid of a load of hard drives, and now I have a mortgage and all of that. I was just basically getting rid of loads of junk and CDs. But what I do, because I'm really kind of organizing my hard drives and my archive, because I've got, I'd say, 20 years of work archived on online and on drives. So I've got everything twice everywhere, which is nice. It's insanity. It feeds my OCD and my ADHD. I found
it's a great
this,
method, though.
Yeah, I found this disc with scripts on, and one of the scripts was Chords. And it was there was a different title before, but I changed the title because I wanted to make it about music and a guitar, especially because there's going to be a performance at the end. I kind of looked at it and it hadn't aged. There wasn't kind of any age to it, and I've curated and been a founder of three festivals now, two Hellbounds and two Isolations and two Hellbounds. I think that's right. It's four in total, actually. But yeah, I've always been kind of support a champion of other people, and right. I've almost been too afraid to create my own shorts. But I've been a producer of so many. I thought, right, this is the time this year I'm doing it, no matter what. You know?
Yes.
So it's about time. I put a lot of pressure on myself as well to get it right, because I want it to look great. I want it to look sound great.
You are fully qualified to do this, and it sounds like it's a great idea that's gaining momentum. But there's definitely, like, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves for stuff, you know, and I think that's something where, you know, there's a spectrum. There's people on one end who just make anything, even if it's garbage, throw it out there. And that kind of works as long as you see them learning and you see their stuff getting gradually better. And then there's the other side that is like, you know, I cannot release this until it is perfect, because otherwise people will think I'm garbage. And, you know, like, sooner or later, you're going to have to make something, whether or not it's garbage. And the average person's first short isn't great. And that's okay. This one might be, because it sounds like it's got a great actress, a great concept that appealed to that actress. And, you know, it's coming from you and you have a lot of experience doing these things. So this one might actually be fantastic. But even if it's not, that's okay. It's important that you do it, whether or not it comes out as a perfect thing, you know? And, you know, the amazing thing is that, like, you have been such a support person for other people, and it's amazing. It's amazing what you've done. But also through that process, you are learning. You know, when you curate films, you are learning. When you support other people's journeys, you are learning. So now all of that knowledge and all of those connections of people you've supported, that is going to come into this piece.
Yeah.
Because, you know, every time you do things, you're meeting people and you're learning. And then later when you're doing your own things, you have knowledge and people.
Do you ever say kind of no out of politeness to any kind of projects? You know, like, obviously you kind of want to work with all of your friends and your kind of colleagues, but is there ever a point where the material is like, it's not of interest and you don't really want to do it? Because saying no is just as powerful as yes, really, isn't it?
Totally. Well, and I mean, part of it is schedule, like, if I, but the other thing is that I like to give notes. So a year ago, someone approached me with an idea for their first feature, and they wanted to go to camera. And I was like, hey, like, this is really strong. And, you know, in this lead, like, this and this about it resonates with me. It's also a big time commitment. So for no money, or for a bit of money, or whatever it was at the time, I don't remember. You know, and I'm also busy because of this and this. And then I was like, listen, like, this lead and this story, it has this and this and this. These things are great. It could also benefit from fleshing out this. You have a lot of this, and that's good, but you probably need about this much of that. And then to use that space for this aspect and this aspect. And I kind of, you know, because I do a lot of writing now, you know, I've got a feature that's gotten some good feedback that I'm trying to sell. I've got another feature that's about halfway through the writing process that I'm hoping to get produced. I've got another feature that after several rewrites, I then saw a casting call for a similar project and realized I had to abandon it. So, you know, I've got a cop show that's sitting on my back shelf that, like, I cannot, but I want to play one of the two cops, which is pretty big. It's a pretty big ask, and I don't currently have that clout. So that one's waiting on the back burner until I have enough clout to be like, hey, I want to do this, and I want to play this guy. So yeah, I do a lot of writing, and, you know, sometimes the project will come in, and I'll be like, hey, well, you know, I love this story. Would you think about doing this, 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 and this? And if they're like, yeah, 100%, I'm on it. Let's, you know, would you be willing to talk more about this? Let's do some rewrites together. I'll send you a new draft and, you know, in 2 weeks or whatever. Then I'm like, all right, this person, number one, can take feedback. Number two, can involve me in the creative process. And number three, you know, is prioritizing the final product being great, because I want to be in things that are great. So I want to be in things with people where the final product is going to be great. In this particular case, the guy's like, hey, you know, thanks for your feedback, but I'm happy with things the way they are, and I just want to go to camera. Do you still want to be involved? I was like, let me check my schedule. You know, I don't think I can do this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because they didn't take what I gave. I gave them the gift of my time figuring out how the story could be reworked to be much stronger. They didn't take that gift. That's okay. But that's also not something I'm going to be say yes to. Versus occasionally there's a project where like, I'll do that, and they'll be like, yes, we'll take our feedback. And I'll be like, great. You know, send me the next rewrite. Also, when are you going to camera? And they're like, oh, we're going to camera this. And I'm like, I have a job that's going to pay me on those days, so I can't say yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it depends. It depends. I mean, like right now, so Zach, who did Blood and Justice, and he and I also did a feature together called Jim's Room, which was kind of a funny story. I was helping him move. And he was like, well, you know, I'm also going to have to repaint this house because we're turning it over. Do you want to help me paint too? And I was kind of like, well, yeah, maybe if we make it a movie. So then me, right? Maybe if it's on camera, asshole, was my response. So then me, him, and some of, you know, his partner Lily and his friend Lachlan, our friend Lachlan, who was also helping us, and our friends, we all started just throwing out ideas. And we eventually came up with this idea of like a found footage style mockumentary where this homeless dude, because at the time I had a lot of beard and a lot of hair because I hadn't booked anything in a little while. You know, it was COVID, whatever. Actually, I had booked something before that, but they wanted me to keep the hair and beard. So, like, I still had all this hair and beard. Yeah. And, so we made up this thing of, like, okay, this homeless guy is on the street. We see a bit of him, but, like, through this camera that's, like, watching him, stalking him, keeping an eye on him. Then he gets offered this job to help paint this guy's house. Then the guy but the guy is filming him the whole time. And you're like, guy just doesn't trust him? What? And then the guy starts like interviewing him on camera, and you're like, okay, guy's just trying to look like he's a good dude for giving a homeless person employment, or is he actually a good dude trying to tell this guy's story? What's happening? And then stuff starts to get weird, and then gradually like weirder and weirder and weirder until you realize that the guy who offered him the job is like a murder rapist, and he, you know, ultimately has to escape with his life. So we came up with that. And then, like 3 weeks later, we made this, and it was a lot of fun.
It's a great idea.
But anyway,
I love that. I love that.
It's pretty cool. We're trying to figure out how to put it out there. Also, like I had just taken a screenwriting class, so I wrote the script in like a week. You know, like it's not perfect, but it's you know, it's finished, and we're hoping to find some way to put it out there. But anyway. So, like, he and I are working on a project now, sort of a dramedy, where I play this sort of everyday Joe, working class loser, who is forced to deal with his pill addiction and his estranged son. His wife comes out of the closet and leaves him for a woman. So we're working on that dramedy right now. But, like, right now there are projects where people are like, hey, you want to come and be part of this short? And I read it, and I'm like, yes, I do. When are you filming? And they're like, this weekend. And I'm like, I'm doing this thing that isn't even paying me money, but that I'm putting money into because I believe in it. So I can't.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah.
It's tricky, all kinds of aspects like that. There are like, there's even people that want to know me. I won't go into names, but there's Jack will know who I'm talking about. My creative partner at
Okay.
Shoot. But it's like,
yeah,
they're enthusiastic about getting to know you, but I just don't have enough time in my life to get to know another person. That's how it feels sometimes. And
oh yeah.
And then they're just so kind of needy. I'm like, I don't need another needy person. I can fit. Like, if you and I met, I think we'd be great friends, right? But it's because there's there's no energy sap between us. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if we work together on something, it'll be great process or be good friends. But then sometimes there's a energy sap of an individual. What we do in the shadows, there's an energy vampire. It basically sucks the life of... like the mental strength out of people, makes you weak. I have that with people, because after I came out of hospital with COVID, it wasn't just my fuse that was short. I started to realize how little spare time I had, or how little time I was dedicated to suffer fools. I don't suffer fools anymore.
Sure.
I really don't. But I totally appreciate, you know, this is what I have, this is what I can do. But if the idea is great, I actually have this additional kind of TARDIS-like amount of availability. You know, it's just, it can happen. But just on Jim's Room, is it called Jim's Room?
Jim's Room, yeah, that's right.
If you ever want us to kind of shout it out or talk about it or post pictures or whatever, please let us know.
Okay, I most certainly will. Thank you.
Because it sounds really... I'm a huge fan of found footage stuff. Really big fan. So,
right. We're trying to figure it...
No, go ahead.
Especially... Sorry, after you. Especially like what?
Paranormal Activity, or even like... wasn't great. You know, it wasn't great. Apollo 18 or The Tremendous Blair Witch. I'm a huge, huge fan of these things. Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. When it's done badly, it's kind of a bit hokey, but...
totally.
Exactly, yeah. So I really want to know, because I've seen post pictures and video online, and I've mentioned it a couple of times, what is Snowblinded all about? What's the kind of premise of that?
Perfect. So the premise is basically that this guy, played by me, takes his best friend, played by Manny, up to the old family cottage for a cross-country ski trip. And as you know, even as they get there, there's little details that start to seem incongruous. And finally they get out for skiing, and the best friend goes to take a leak, but in ski boots, which he's not used to walking in, falls down a steep bluff and breaks his ankle. So then my character is trying to my character is like the Boy Scout survivalist, you know, makes a woodland stretcher out of the cross country skis that he's pulling with ski poles, and starts trying to drag his best friend to safety through the snowy woods. But then just reality starts to glitch more and more. And he's more and more is going on until he can't find the way out. He doesn't know why. He leaves his friend by the fire because he needs to get out on his own and figure out what the heck's going on. And then there's more and more glitching, and gradually you realize that he has this horrifying repressed childhood trauma that is, you know, that he's pushed away for his entire life, that's starting to come back and mess with him, and you know, and essentially get him to be crazier and crazier and more and more violent because it was violent childhood trauma. And then the forest sort of becomes a metaphor for his mind, and it sort of becomes an internal struggle between the part of him that is a good person and wants to do the right thing and wants to get his friend to safety and wants to, you know, to be who he is most of the time, versus the part of him that is this horrifying, screaming, repressed inner child that you know, saw some serious shit and is trying to force the current version of him to come to terms with the childhood trauma any way he can. So it's interesting because, you know, on the one hand, it's a body horror with all this intense, gross, grim stuff that happens in certain flashes. And, you know, there's a part where I'm like rubbing blood on my face and it's kind of sensual. There's a part where I'm like literally cutting my clothes off and running screaming and naked through the woods. So it's got all that craziness, but it's also got a lot of philosophy about, you know, Nietzsche's thoughts on childhood trauma coming back later in life. And you know, it's got a lot of philosophy, and it's also got a lot of cool timeline stuff that Brian is particularly.
A few moments later.
Hopefully this is just a continuation. We'll put some sort of special effect or sound effect in between the two cuts.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Do you want me to just finish? I was,
yes,
on a roll.
Please, yeah.
I can finish,
yeah,
it.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, you know, it's got all of that, but then something Brian Lockyer is really good at is just like figuring out how to make sure that no matter how crazy stuff gets, everything is for a reason. Everything works because of something. So it's kind of this puzzle film at the same time where, you know, there's the storyline about Sean taking his friend Manny out to the woods and Manny breaks his leg and then blah, 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 blah. But then like there's a glitch here. There's a dream here and you're like those things. There's a glitch here and a dream here. And then this suddenly reality is this and you're like, what? And but then reality is back to this and you're like, okay. And so Brian has done a great job of taking these body horror elements and the relationship with Manny and Sean, which is kind of the heart of the movie, and you know, the philosophy and the childhood trauma, and turning it all into this puzzle where, you know, the first time you watch it, you're probably going to be like, why did that happen? But the second time you watch it, you're going to be like, oh, that's this and that's the jacket and that, right?
Yeah.
Like, so Brian did a really good job of working that into the film.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
That'll be quite interesting to see because I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with body horror because body horror for body horror's sake is the worst for me. You know, like a Saw, for instance, I'm not a huge fan of that kind of franchise,
right.
But if it's done right, like the small, you know, Cronenberg stuff, I'm a big fan of David Cronenberg. If it's done right, and
so is Brian.
Yeah, if it's interspersed in the right way, it can be very, mm-hmm. very effective. Even if it's like in a dreamlike state. My wife and I, we're going through this thing called Alphabet Cinema at the moment, where we both pick a film of each letter of the alphabet, and then we watch it. And I think we're on R now, so we're going to watch Kurosawa's Ran. But mm-hmm. my O was Outland with Sean Connery. It's a science fiction film. It's a brilliant, brilliant science fiction film. And they use elements of body horror in that, where people, what happens to the human body when it goes out into space or in a space helmet, where they go crazy. And yeah, it's there's actually a scene that's very you in it. It's about this. I've got a really strange opinion of you. It's not true. But it's is this basically there's a drug being sold on this refinery, which is on a third moon of Jupiter or something. And Connery's a police officer on this mining colony. And the drug that's used is basically, because they've got nothing else, they work really hard and they party hard, but they use this drug that's imported and it's basically like investigation in space. It's really, really good. There's Jerry Goldsmith's music.
Great.
And
oh yeah.
One of the scenes, and I just had the spark of you when I watched the scene. It's the way the drug reacts with certain people. Some are okay, but some like literally go mad on it. And the elements of Snowblinded kind of sound those manic states or the way those things are connected. It sounds very much how I have thoughts about that particular film. So. It's just I want to kind of shout out about Outland. It's a great movie. You should check it out.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. I also really love that you're watching a movie, you see someone completely losing their mind, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's like Michael Mazurkiewicz. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that guy who should play a serial killer. Yeah, that's him. Yeah. Okay.
Where do you kind of draw your inspiration from for your kind of your work, your kind of performances? Is it everyday life? Is it family? Is it friends? Is it a little bit of everything?
Yeah, you know, a lot of it is everyday life. A lot of it is family and friends. Sometimes it's something weird where like I think life is two things: life experience and spirituality, which is the processing of life experience. So, you know, I had a friend who has insanely heavy PTSD, and I was there for them during this anxiety attack where they were losing their minds. And afterwards, like, I was exhausted and and just like irritable for days because I had given so much time and emotion to their trauma. I was like, oh man, wow. I let alone what they were going through, I needed several days of recovery, let alone what they went through.
Yeah.
You know, and I really honor that they had the strength to go through it, and that, and I'm really honored to have been part of it. But then, you know, then I did some emotional processing and I saw the beauty of their strength and the horrifying beauty of their pain and the way that everything they went through was linked in some twisted way to love, either love of themselves or love of the person they allowed to hurt them, and how at its root, you know, it was all this loving thing that is common to every being on this planet. You know, that was sort of the meditation and the spiritual processing side. And then when I was doing Snowblinded, there's a scene where my character has just seen something and is losing track of reality and is going through this breakdown. And after we finished the day of filming, I was like, wow, that felt really real, but also vaguely familiar. Oh, I was being them. I was being them. So a lot of it is that, is just having life experiences and taking in people and sharing experiences with them. And then the added step of emotionally processing it, seeing the commonalities, seeing the basic humanity, seeing the human truths underneath, seeing the love and the joy and the pain that we all feel under what they're doing. So that then when I'm in that situation as an actor, I can go, okay, this character is feeling this and this and this. I have not felt those, but I saw this person feel these, and I processed with my meditations how these things are these emotions, and I do have these emotions. So now I can just take these emotions that I have from processing what they shared with me, or in some cases what I did have in this situation, and rebuild them as this. And now I have my character, but from a place of deep emotional truth, because, you know, they came from my or other people's real experiences distilled through the process of meditation. And distilling it through the process of meditation is, I think, the game changer for me as an actor. I mean, if you take a class with Sophie Ann Rooney and Raw, she is very much about the spiritual connection between the actor, the actor's emotions, the character's emotions, and the character, and sort of approaching it that way. So, you know, it's partially from things I've experienced and felt and things I've witnessed people experiencing and feeling, but always distilled and processed through meditation and feeling feelings. And then I can translate it to the character.
Absolute pleasure, Michael. And we'll definitely speak with Manny and Zach as well, and we'll rock that episode about blood and justice and all things horror in another episode.
Yeah, 100%. You too. And best of luck with everything. You know?
I love
to do this again.
I love that dressing gown, by the way.
Thank you. I wear it a lot.
Yeah, it's very,
as you might imagine.
It's very you.
Thank you.
All right, see you soon, mate.
I'm glad.
See you soon. Bye-bye.